Broadcasting from the Wisconsin State Fair today, I'm Larry Mueller. My first guest today, Scott Craven, UW Extension wildlife ecologist. And we're now joined, we have two more guests joining us here on the stage today. Molly John, Dean of the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at UW. Molly, hi.
Hi, Larry. Great to be here.
And Paula Bonner as well. Paula is president of the University of Wisconsin Alumni Association.
Good afternoon, Larry.
Hey, what a wonderful day. UW Day. I'm telling you, there's a line of people in front of the, I think it's the food science stand. Now, are they getting ice cream? Is that it, Molly?
That's our Babcock Hall truck, and that line is long.
The line is long, and the line's long at a lot of places. We've learned that one of the nice things, I think, about UW Day, bringing the faculty and staff out here to meet people and really talk with them about a whole variety of things, Paula.
Oh, it's outstanding. It's representative of the whole university. It's connecting with people from all around the state. It is the Wisconsin idea in action. And we've got a lot of alumni volunteers involved collecting school supplies for the Milwaukee Public Schools. That's going over great today as well. And it's just a great university partnership. It's wonderful to be part of it.
And Molly, the College of Ag and Life Sciences is well represented here today.
We're always well represented at the State Fair. This is a place our college has belonged for a long, long time. But today is a very special day. The first day we've been on the Midway with sponsorship of an event like this with so many other schools and colleges from UW-Madison representing all the missions of our university. Education, research, outreach, it's all here.
You know, I think one of the kind of the neat things that we have going at the UW-Madison is the cooperation that we've developed over the years and continue to develop with industry and with business leaders in the state.
Well, we're here to celebrate all those partnerships with Wisconsin families, with Wisconsin businesses, and with the state of Wisconsin. So we're delighted to show you what the great work we're doing on campus, all across campus, and welcome all of you to this great event.
And Paula, talk a little bit about the Alumni Association and how you're involved in this and what you're involved in just in general.
Well, we're involved in any way we can to connect alumni back to the institution and have that great symbiotic partnership between the university, its alumni, and the friends of the university. We take real seriously our role in helping the schools and colleges with their outreach efforts and connecting faculty back to alums and alums to the faculty. So it's a great partnership. As you were talking about corporate relations, we have lots of alumni who are key business leaders around the state in all different industry sectors. And I think that symbiotic relationship is just so important for the state, for the university. Everybody working together is what makes it the success it is.
You know, we'll be talking, Molly, with John Greenler coming up next after noon about the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. And that's probably a pretty good example of putting research and education and from the UW together with business.
That's right, Larry. The Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center is our newest federal research center on our campus. It's the largest research award in our university's history, and it's focused on 21st century energy economy. I see our leader right behind our audience out there. Tim Donahue is here, and we have a great booth. So if you want to know what the energy economy in the 21st century could look like, make sure you stop by that booth.
And John will be up on stage with me after 12, and we'll talk a lot more in detail about this. Well, are you leading the cheers this afternoon, by the way, Paula?
Absolutely. We've got a big pep rally, and Molly and I are going to be right up there screaming our heads off. You know, the football team started practice yesterday, and excitement's in the air on that front as well.
So 1 o'clock there'll be, I think, is it 1? Is it 1? I think it's 1 o'clock. There's going to be a pep rally here, and in the meantime, you can go around and see all of the wonderful exhibits that we have here at UW Day, everything from Paul Bunyan's axe.
That's right.
From the athletic department is well represented here to some of our Cal students are working with DNA over there and helping the little kids develop some DNA,
That's
which
right.
is a lot of fun. Well, it's great to have you here now. We'll be here. The UW festivities and activities will be going on right through till all day, isn't it?
Yep, until like 5 or 6 o'clock tonight. So, and lots of Bucky tattoos to put on and great things to take part in.
And I've already learned how to make some cheese. I watched the cheese demonstration earlier this morning. I took a look at making sausage over there. They're doing some demonstrations on that. There's free ice cream. What more could you ask for?
And Larry, I hear you did very well on that putting green.
Oh, well, yeah, I did pretty well. Yeah, there's a putting green. You can try it. I was, only the second person to make a putt, and I made two, and I'm the only one to make two out of three. So thank you both.
So far.
Thank you both very much for being with us.
Thank you, Larry, very much.
Appreciate
it. Thank you, Larry.
Molly John, Dean of the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences, a round of applause from them. And Paula Bonner, President of the UW-Wisconsin Alumni Association. And Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist, still with us. And Scott, it's a great day to be here, isn't it?
It's a great day to be here. And as I say, we're on the cusp of fall. And for a wildlife person, fall and spring are the times of the year. So it's great. Once state fair is over, time to get outside.
Yeah, time to get outside now. We got another minute or so to go before our noon break. What do you want to leave our audience with?
Well, I guess I'd leave with a message that, you know, despite what we hear about things like VHS and CWD and emerald ash borers and whatnot, the wildlife resources and the natural resources of Wisconsin in general are in pretty darn good shape. And we've got a good crew of stewards to take care of them, not only the people we employ and the DNR and other agencies, but also the private landowners that really control most of the habitat in the state. So a lot of our wildlife exists at their good graces on their land, and they're doing a darn good job. So I think overall, future looks pretty good, in spite of things like global climate change and other issues that we're going to have to take into account and adapt to.
Well, it's something, there's always a challenge. I mean, we've been here a long time. You and I have been here for a long time. Long, long time, as your upcoming birthday can attest to.
Oh, thank you for bringing that up again.
But there are always challenges, but, I think we've done a pretty good job over the years of meeting those challenges. Sometimes we do a little better sometimes than others. But
There are always occasional mistakes and errors in judgment, but that goes with everybody being human. But I think generally the people of the state should be pretty happy with what's going on out there.
Thanks, Scott. Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist, our guest here. I'm Larry Mueller. Coming up, we'll be talking with John Greenler about the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Broadcasting from the Wisconsin State Fair today, I'm Larry Mueller, talking about a variety of topics over the course of the program today. And I'm going to zero in now on ethanol, producing ethanol from cellulosic materials. John Greenler is my guest now. John directs education and outreach at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. It's headquartered at UW in Madison. So it seems to be a perfect guest today for UW Day here at State Fair. His doctorate, his research interests are systems biology and integrating different biological principles like ecology and molecular biology to solve contemporary scientific problems. So really pleased to have him with us today. And certainly as we talk about what's going on at the center and as we talk about producing ethanol from cellulosic materials, I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And also for our audience today, if you have some questions as we move along today, I'd certainly hope you'd come up to the microphone right up front and ask your questions as well. John, welcome. Nice to have you with us.
Hey, it's really great to be here today. It's fun to be kind of in the middle of all the energy of the fair, being able to talk about something as exciting as consideration of second-generation biofuels and where the future is in biofuels, sustainability, and solving our energy problems.
Well, now, the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center focuses on producing ethanol from cellulosic materials. How is this different from the way ethanol is produced today?
Right, and that's a really good, it's kind of a subtle but very significant question. You know, currently today, most ethanol is produced from grains, mainly corn grain, which is really, it's a crop which requires a lot of energy to produce. And it also, in some ways, you know, really ties up our agricultural system to produce fuel as compared to food. Cellulosic materials, on the other hand, are very, very abundant and are available from lots of sources that don't really compete, but in fact would really complement our agricultural systems. Some of them are actually kind of which you could consider waste products from our agricultural production practices, things like corn stove or all the parts of the corn plant that's left over after you've harvested the grain, to things like sawdust and other waste products from remaining products from our forestry industry. And then, you know, really looking forward, there's all sorts of crops that we can grow on what are known as kind of marginal agricultural lands where you couldn't grow corn, for example. Crops like switchgrass, or even like I have a small bale of kind of diversified prairie plant materials, essentially using a native prairie as a source of biological materials that could be turned into ethanol and biofuel.
You know, when you think about that, prairie plants or maybe switchgrass, you think, gosh, with all of our needs, our energy needs, is that going to be enough?
Right, and a really important, you know, perspective to put out right at the beginning is we really don't feel like we have, you know, the magic bullet, the silver bullet to really solve our, you know, total energy problem. What we're looking for are lots of pieces that when you add them all up are really going to, you know, move us in the right direction. So it's clear that we really need to think about conservation is going to be really important. You know, biofuels provide another opportunity. And then we, you know, clearly looking more broadly to things like solar or wind power. It's all these different, you know, resources that we need to kind of piece together. And biofuels is just one of, you know, a number. Maybe we're looking at, you know, 10% or so of our overall energy needs being met by biofuels.
But that's a considerable amount when you think about it.
It is. And the thing to recognize is that when we move from highly, you know, specialized and intensive crops like corn grain and we begin to look at, you know, things like waste products, you know, they can be, you know, yard waste to, wood materials to things that you can grow on lands that wouldn't be appropriate for annual production where you have to plow every year, but you could plant a perennial crop and then harvest for, you know, a significant number of years so you don't have to worry about all of the impacts of intensive agriculture. There's a very large opportunity that opens up when you kind of look in that kind of a framework.
What do you think the greatest scientific challenges are for the center itself as you work on developing these?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, the challenge and the opportunity lies out there. I mean, the fact is that there's already a lot of biological organisms that know what to do, know how to do what we're already trying to achieve. I think we all know that dairy cows can go out there and graze on grass and just be healthy and hearty, and that's because of the fact that there's microbes in their rumens, in their stomachs, that allow for this digestive process. Clearly, the same thing is true for termites as well. So there's all sorts of largely microbes out there that already know how, they already have this trick solved. And one of the things that we're really involved in is what's known as bioprospecting. You know, trying to find the existing organisms that are out there that know how to do this, know how to convert these materials from cellulose into simplified sugars and whatnot. And so a lot of what we're trying to do is trying to find those organisms and find how we can make them work with us, how we can kind of tap into that pre-existing, essentially, you know, capability that's out there in nature and make it be a part of, you know, systems that will generate fuels for us.
I like that bioprospecting. That's a cool term.
And we just had, for example, David Mead, who's the president of Lucigen, one of our partners in the center, is actually making several trips out to Yellowstone and actually sampling for microbes that come from the hot pools, looking for what are known as thermophiles, organisms that can survive and thrive in very high temperatures. And actually, in terms of trying to process a lot of these biological materials, adding heat to the mixture really helps. So we can find a microbe that likes the hot and can break down cellulose. That's just going to be a significant opportunity for us. So we're really looking at all sorts of very fascinating places for the organisms that essentially can do this work for us.
Talking with John Greenler today, who directs education and outreach at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center on the UW-Madison campus. Pleased to have him with us. If you have a question, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. That was one term, grassoline.
Grassoline is I think it's a really fun term because in some ways it kind of cuts through all the, all the big words that us scientists like to use, and it really in some ways gets to the idea of, how can we take, all the grass that's, such an abundant part of our environment here in Wisconsin, for example, especially southern Wisconsin, and turn it into, essentially ethanol that we can then use as, to power our energy needs, turn into ethanol. And in some ways, it's worth thinking about ethanol, as being kind of an energy intermediate. It's almost kind of, in some ways, kind of like electricity. There's lots of different ways, lots of different materials that you can use to produce ethanol. And then there's a number of different things that you can do with ethanol. And one of the ones that I think, holds a lot of clearly, I think, known potential is to be able to use it as a transportation fuel source.
John Greenler, our guest today. And John, I know there has been, I mean, I'm surprised I haven't heard a question about this, some criticism of ethanol and biofuels that, we're using more energy to produce this than we're actually, so we're not really gaining anything from the production. And what's the response to that?
Yeah, well, I think this is a real critical consideration, is being able to really kind of take a systems approach, as I like to consider it, to really look at all the different factors that come into play, in the production of something like ethanol, because it's a very complex system, and there's lots of different pieces that need to come together to generate, to produce a chemical like ethanol. Ranging from the fuel that's needed to drive tractors, if you're growing field corn, for example, to producing the nitrogen fertilizer, to transportation, to even the labor considerations of, what does it take to have the people who do the work to make the ethanol, have them in the right place at time, et cetera. When we look at ethanol made from corn, from the grain, from the corn plant, there are a lot of energy inputs that are required. And, it's probably around a break even, maybe a little bit better. A lot of it's going to depend upon, where the plant is, any particular, the particular situation of one particular place. But the story really changes when we begin to look at cellulose as a fuel source. And one of the things that's interesting is there's such a diversity of sources of cellulose. There's so many different plants out there growing in different types of habitats, different ecosystems, different agricultural systems, and the number ranges anywhere from getting, for example, about the equivalent of 2 gallons of gasoline out for every gallon that you might put in, all the way up to, estimates around maybe 36 times, the yield. So it would be the equivalent of getting 36 gallons of gasoline out for every gallon of energy, gasoline units back in. So it's really going to depend upon where you are and what crop you're using or what type of material you're using to, as your source of cellulose to generate the ethanol. So it's going to be, an order of magnitude better in terms of that efficiency.
36 times is, that's a number I haven't heard.
Well, some of them, I think the number is going to get better and better as we get further along in terms of our research and development. And some systems that we're looking at are very, very low input. And, for example, looking at kind of restoring a more native type of a system here in our area, more of a prairie type system, the yield of the materials out may be lower than, for example, growing corn. But what's important is to look at the net balance. And the fact of the matter is there's very, very little energy that needs to be put into maintaining a prairie type or a switchgrass type system. And so even though the gross yield may be out, when you look at energy in and energy out, there's a lot of efficiency in some of those systems.
I saw some research recently that it's a really not a good idea. In fact, it's a bad idea to convert something like tropical rainforests, for example, into farmland for biofuel production. And we are seeing that in some South America, at least.
Yeah, and some of this is direct. There is some agricultural land that's being converted from more native habitat to production of biofuels. Also, I think equally as important is recognizing kind of how the global market impacts our actions here at home, and it's been recognized. And actually, I wish I had a chalkboard I could jump to here on the radio, because it is kind of complicated. But, for example, as we grow more and more corn and the price of corn goes up here in the Midwest, that actually kind of decreases correspondingly the amount of soybeans that are grown. Because of the fact that there's only so much land that can be used. That drives the price of beans up, and that actually makes it more profitable, for example, for a farmer in Brazil to cut down tropical forest and plant a field of beans and make a good profit at doing that. The problem is that a lot of these tropical systems have locked up essentially a huge amount of carbon. And when that native system is destroyed, everything that's in the plants and in the soil is essentially released over a very short period of time, maybe a year or two, in terms of use of those materials, the oxidation of the carbon in the soil into CO2, that it's really a tremendous amount of CO2 which is released. So this is where, as scientists, we need to be, really do our research to understand, what the implications are on a global scale. In terms of these kinds of developments, and this is where moving away from competing with food production, is really important. And in fact, the center has a whole research area. We have five major research areas, and one of them, and actually I think you've spoken with Phil Robertson in the past, who's the director of the sustainability area of research, is really on top of this. And one of the things we're trying to do is anticipate ahead of time what the implications of these technologies are, so that we're really as certain as we possibly can be that, we're moving in a sustainable direction, even before there's actually any production going on, that we're kind of heading off any of these problems at the pass, so to speak.
Well, let's take some calls. Again, if you'd like to join us, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. Give a call. And Becky and Ryle is up.
Hi, I'd like to know if we can convert the ethanol plants that are already in production in Wisconsin over to using the cellulose technology. I'm especially concerned about the ones that have been built by farmers themselves. I'd sure hate to see them end up with an unuseful plant.
Definitely. That you've got a really good question there. And I think one of the things that's really important to recognize in terms of considering cellulosic sources for biofuels is that really, what we've learned in terms of making ethanol from corn grain is really the final step, essentially, in using cellulose to make ethanol as well. And so really what we're talking about is adding some additional processing steps onto kind of the pre-existing process that's making ethanol from corn. And so, I think, any way that we can conserve, all of the resources and efforts that have gone into our pre-existing ethanol production will really just make everything more economical and more sustainable. And so, I think, it's going to take some time to recognize how far down that can trickle in terms of farmers being able to do that. But, they're very familiar and very good at adopting technologies to their own uses. So I think, as we look in longer timescales, I don't see any reason why that shouldn't be possible.
Becky, thank you.
Be able to have extra processes added to it, as well as the farmers perhaps could use some of the land that right now is really considered wasteland, maybe, to provide some of this fuel.
Right, and almost all farms clearly have acreage which is really kind of prime acreage where they can grow, the high energy, high demand, high intensive crops like corn and beans. But almost every farm out there has land which is either highly erodible or has wetland considerations or gravelly soil where you really can't do that kind of intensive annual production. But it really is prime, cropland for, perennial grass-type production. And so this is, I think it's really important in terms of considering sustainability. A real important facet of sustainability is kind of looking at the economic and social considerations. And we really want to make sure that, we're considering, economies of broad scale, local economies, and also really supporting those farm communities that are out there. And I think, cellulosic biofuel sources are just going to mean farmers being able to care for their land better and also make some extra money as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Jerome in Eau Claire will go to you next. Hi, Jerome.
Hi. I was just kind of curious on, I once heard about algae being a good biofuel source, and I was just kind of curious where they stand on that.
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of promise with algae, as an organism for producing biofuels. When we look at cellulosic biofuels, we kind of, the jargon is that we're working on second generation biofuels. Some people like to consider algae as being kind of third generation biofuels. There's a tremendous opportunity. You know, I think it's a little bit further down the pike. We're looking at there's a number of logistical problems. There also it's a much more intensive type of system that we're looking at to be able to actually go from algae to biofuels. There's just a lot more kind of equipment that's necessary, and trying to solve issues. There's like in the biological domain, there's this whole area of biofilms, all the different ways that biological organisms like to stick to things, and algae are really good at this. And so, trying to come up with ways to grow and process the algae without having it kind of gum up the plumbing, so to speak, is an example of the. Of the problems that we're trying to solve. One of the tremendous opportunities with algae is to create algae growth systems that actually are associated with energy plants, coal-fired plants, for example, that really emit a lot of CO2. And there's the opportunity of taking those CO2 emissions and literally bubbling it through the algal culture such that the algae remove that CO2, from those gases being emitted and literally turn it into fuel. So there's a tremendous opportunity there.
And thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Alex in Portage, we'll go to you next. Hi, Alex.
Alex? That relates to the current farm practices and how we might improve the energy potential that's in the soil and in the land that we're using currently. I myself have small number of acres that I put in corn, and the current practices pretty much uniformly now where people are using a glyphosate product like Roundup to basically kill all other weeds in between rows. And my thought has been, we've seen a lot of global warming, potentially global warming, from multiple reasons, and one of which might be tied into the amount of evaporation that occurs in between corn rows of water. Secondly, just that exposed soil is certainly going to generate a higher heat intensity and cause some radiant heat emitting off of that soil. So one thought might be is, granted it's going to suck out some nutrients and some energy, are they putting research into what plants you could grow in between corn rows that wouldn't necessarily compete that much with the corn for the amount of energy and fertilizer put in, and yet be something that's harvestable afterward for an energy source?
And there's a whole kind of structure of production called intercropping, where you do literally have mixtures of crops, that are kind of rows alternating or, between rows of corn, having more, grass-type crops growing. I really like the way you opened up your question within the context of really considering soils, because what's happening below ground is mission critical for us. Soils are frequently neglected and not considered, and within the context of biofuels, and especially within the context of climate change, keeping a close eye on what's happening below ground in those soils is really critical, because one of the key aspects that makes for a good soil is good carbon content, having lots of organic matter in that soil. And the more organic matter that's in the soil translates also into having less CO2 in the atmosphere, because all that carbon in the soil is essentially sequestered carbon. And we actually have scientists in the soil department, for example, Terry Balzer, who's a colleague I'm working with a fair amount now, really looking at and trying to understand all of the dynamics of soil and how carbon functions in the soil and how we can build organic matter into the soil to address these kinds of issues.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And And, John, I'll tell you what, the time flew by here. We're going to have you back and have more time to talk with you. I appreciate having
That'd
you with us very much.
Great to be here today. Thank you, Larry.
John Greenler, Director of Education and Outreach at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, our guest. And a big thanks to him and a big thanks to our audience today and here at Wisconsin State Fair. And to you listening, thank you so much for being with us as well today. It's been a lot of fun. And there's a whole lot more fun. I know there's a pep rally coming up. There's something called the Science of Physics that's going to be a great show for kids. We're looking forward to that as well. And the pep rally is at 1:30 here at the Wisconsin State Fair. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.